and welcome to another Comics Burst from the Full Force podcast, sponsored by Distant Planet Comics and Collectibles, where we take an in-depth look at the newest G.I. Joe comics and related titles of the week. I am Chris McLeod, aka Diagnostic 80, and joining me on this burst tonight is the luckiest of all the charmers. Brian, I will cut you if you make one more potato joke, hickey. So let's get into our first comic for this week. Oh, and I should say, spoilers ahead. So first up is Rom and the Micronauts, issue number 4. Asymmetric warfare. Newly emerged from microspace, Rom and the Micronauts seek out Baron Kaza and his dire wraith allies, but it may be too late to save Earth from being consumed by a dark god from beyond our dimension. Now, on the last Comics Burst, or we've only done, I think, two of these other than this one we're doing right now. So this is our third Comics Burst. I was speaking to you and Paddy at the time, Brian, about how I'd felt that the Rom series had kind of been a little bit mirror imaged throughout the entire run. Like, it was all very same, very similar kind of things going on. Each issue followed a bit of a formula. And I felt that this one, the Rom and the Micronauts, which has kind of been going along the same path as the Rom and the Micronauts comics had been doing as well, all of a sudden started to do a lot more different things here. And I'm not sure about how you felt about it, but I was actually quite into this issue personally. How about yourself, Brian?
I think this is a great issue. Now, kind of full disclosure, I didn't follow the Rom and the Micronauts series when it kicked up after First Strike. I've only really followed these characters between the Revolutionaries and First Strike series as they kind of, you know, featured in those particular runs.
Yeah.
But having read this, I mean, obviously I read this just for the show tonight after the news burst. They really look like they're getting ready to wrap up this, what I think has been a great story that started way back in the first run of Revolution.
Yeah.
And then obviously that Micronauts Rom sub story, again, getting ready to wrap that all up. And I think they really picked up the ante on this. I actually, when I read this, I felt that I've missed out not buying these titles and keeping going with it. Now, you know, I'm not sure how consistent they've been. You know, you've said before that maybe it's been a bit samey, a bit formulaic.
Yeah.
But certainly after reading this issue, this is a great issue.
It is.
And if anyone's familiar with this line from First Strike, I would recommend you pick this up because they're about to wrap up this story in a big, big way.
Yeah, I felt like previously reading Rom and Micronauts comics, the Micronauts was slightly different. That didn't have the same formulaic of thing going on. It's because obviously they were being like knocked around all over the place. They were coming out of their own universe. They were kind of, you know, propelled into this universe. And then, you know, kind of they were fighting different fights along the way. And there's a real it goes all over the place with the Micronauts. So I was actually more interested in the Micronauts comics than I was the Rom ones. I was getting the Rom ones every time, but it was more so that I could keep in, you know, with this combined universe. Now, the Rom comic really did, I think, suffer from this formulaic run of you start off in the middle of the fight that started in the end of the last issue. So you've always got that kind of bridge starting off with some action. Then there would be the almost inevitable fleeing of the Dire Wraiths or escaping. The Dire Wraiths would escape. And then Rom would then recharge. There would be a little bit of back and forth, but I didn't feel like there was much in the way of character development as such. I still don't have a voice for Rom. That sounds really weird. I don't hear the guy speak, much like I joked at JoeCon when Dave and I did the panel, and Dave had the old Rom and Action Man comic strip up on the screen, and we thought it'd be funny to like recreate it, you know, audibly for the people watching. So I gave Rom this ridiculous voice, like, "Hello, I'm Rom." So it was very much like almost like a posh Dalek kind of voice. And
that's kind of how I actually hear Rom in my head when I'm reading the comics.
Well, I'm glad that's the case, but I still haven't. I feel like this character still needs a voice, and I think that only something like multiple. Obviously, with G.I. Joe, you've got all of the voice actors from the cartoons that have ever done them. You know, you've got those voices in your head. With Mask, it was the same. The cartoon has given me the voices for those particular characters. Let me think. What else has gone there? I mean, it's really where I struggle to kind of to hear what I'm reading is when I read ROM and Micronauts and so on and so forth, because they haven't had that, that haven't had that kind of media backup. Obviously, Micronauts will be having that soon. So I've always, I kind of struggled a bit with ROM. I never felt like I was fully invested in it. A couple of issues really did, you know, drag me in. Shining Armor, the crossover with Transformers, superb. If you can get pick that up as a trade paperback, get it. It's really good, really interesting. You know, tons, and I mean, it really works with the Transformers too. And the fact that the Direwraiths, you know, it's just really good. So check that out. I don't want to give too much away while we're talking about this. But I thought this issue, it didn't have that same formulaic approach that previous ROM issues and the first three of this series kind of felt the same kind of way. And because of that, I was drawn in. And just like you said, and I think it was basically due to the fact that there was some more, there was a little bit more character progression in the middle of this, where you get the kind of love interest Livia and the conversation between Rom and her about he can see a way of getting out of this armor that they're locked in, right? And he can do it using the Micronauts technology or energy changing that he's managed to get off Baron Kaza when in the last time they battled each other. So because of that, he's kind of trying to talk to Livia and say, oh, we should try and get this sorted so that we can be out of our, you know, our prisons. But she's kind of saying that when she was alive before the Solstice Order armor was kind of like, you know, given to her, she did not have a great life leading up just to, you know, towards the end of her life. So she has kind of already come to terms with being a Solstar Knight and being this kind of hero or heroine in this case, but hero. And Rom is kind of like still clinging to that humanity, isn't he? And that comes out in the middle of this issue. And then you also get a Croyer for the Micronauts who suffers with a similar kind of thing. He's kind of flesh and bionics combined kind of thing. So there's this kind of almost weird like relationship between the three of those guys that now, and you see Acroya talking to Livia, and you can tell that he's trying to get, like, you know, some advice off her. And she's very, like, you know, very logical, very just about.
Actually, I love that.
Yeah.
Totally picked up on that in this issue. And like, while I don't know a whole lot about Livia's backstory, it's really apparent how Rom hasn't accepted what he is, and that he still feels like he's got a long way to go to kind of, you know, mature as a character in that sense. Not necessarily for us as the readers, but, you know, as in terms of his character arc, he's got he's nowhere near come to terms with the reality as Livia has.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, and I think that I think that's what's made it finally. You've kind of seen like that sliver of humanity in him, and all of a sudden it's kind of like, oh, okay, yeah, I can get on board with that. And I loved, I mean, it was a nice flow. The art's always great in these comics. Like, I've never had an issue of ROM or the Micronauts where I've thought, you know, that's sketchy or that doesn't look great. I mean, I'd literally just opened it to a random page, and there's a really nice splash page, you know, of like action going on at one point. The art, I mean, you can follow it. It's nice. It's clear. All the characters are nice and defined. Although Paddy did have that issue, I think, on when he spoke about the Micronauts last time, of not really knowing the characters well enough to determine who's who. And that's always going to be the case when you're not familiar with something. Like, I mean, it'd be the same with someone who's not familiar with G.I. Joe reading a G.I. Joe comic. And, you know, if you don't have all of the code names tattooed to each person each time, then you're not going to know who's who. So I kind of feel like they've done a really good job with that.
To be fair, they do give you the who's who panel,
yeah,
you know, on the inside front cover. Having, you know, read some of these characters, you know, or seen some of these characters in the Revolution series, you know, I'm coming to it, you know, I know who they are. But, you know, they do a good job of kind of labeling them, you know, up front, because there are a lot of players in the mix in this story, for sure. Your comment on the art, though, I mean, it really is spectacular. And that first panel on the first page, as you get into it, with the Direwraiths zoning in our heroes. I mean, that's an incredible opening scene. And that would be a trademark of a lot of these comics.
Oh, absolutely. I think the battle art really well. And it's really like striking. And that last panel. Okay, so we have said spoilers ahead. It does appear that they're a little bit too late in stopping the dark goddess of the Dire Wraith.
They're finished. They're finished.
They're screwed. And you can see this giant, like, spidery, Dire Wraith-y, ghostly type apparition coming out of somewhere. So, I mean, and that last panel, I loved, like, the way they've got Rom framed, and I love, like, you know, the lighting on him and everything. I just think it looks really, really good. But again, like, definitely worth picking up the series at the moment just for this issue 4. I think it's really kind of come into its own finally. Unfortunately, right towards the end of its life. So, I mean, we've got, I think, maybe one issue left of this. I may be wrong, but I don't think there are many issues left with the Rom Micronauts crossover.
Did you say to be concluded at the end? Yep. So that makes me think there's only one issue left.
Yep, absolutely correct. So it's just issue 5 to come, and then it's over for Rom and the Micronauts, which is a shame, really, because I feel like we've slowly but surely kind of stuttered our way to the end of this combined universe. And as fun as it has been, I feel like there's been a number of missteps down the road. And we have discussed this on previous episodes and stuff. It probably goes well to say again that obviously G.I. Joe, that came to an end before it even completed. So that was a real shame for lots and lots of reasons, obviously. The sales just haven't been there at the end of the day, and that's one of the problems that the combined universe has had as a comic run. I mean, it feels like they haven't been able... It feels like each writer hasn't been able to fulfill what they wanted to achieve, has it? Like, they've had to either rush towards the end of what they're doing, or they've been stopped indefinitely.
Yeah, one of the harsh realities, harsh commercial realities. If the sales aren't there, it's going to have an impact. They're either going to have to call things short sooner rather than later, to cut back on costs, or if something is really unpopular, it just gets cancelled, it gets pulled. And I think we've seen a bit of that. I don't really know why the interest hasn't been there. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
There's been maybe too many titles for me to have the budget to follow them all. But, over time, I'd have no problem kind of going back and picking up trade paperbacks from time to time and kind of filling out the full combined universe in my collection. But I just couldn't stick with all of the titles. I had to be very selective while it was happening.
Yeah.
But overall, I've really enjoyed the creative input, both from the writing teams and the art teams. I've been really comfortable with the combined universe, and I've said it like lots of times on the show that I'm a big fan of it. But I know it hasn't ticked the boxes for a lot of people too.
Yeah. Which is a shame. But anywho, let's move on from Rom and the Micronauts. Before we do, let's give Rom and the Micronauts issue 4 a potating. And if you're not familiar with our rating system, it's pretty simple. Because we're heavily racist on this show, we tend to take the mick out of Brian and Paddy for being Irish. And we decided to go for a potato rating, but we're also taking the mick out of Justin Bell for his rating system of always giving something 5 stars. So we thought we'd combine the two rating systems to make potatings. What do you give out of 5 potatoes? What would you give Rom and the Micronauts issue 4, Brian?
I'm really happy to see this coming to an end in a good way, because I've liked this story and I've liked these characters. And I think this issue, it's an action-packed issue, and they're really ramping up the drama and the tension here. So I am going to give this 4.5 potatoes.
Fantastic. I, for similar reasons, I have to say that it's one of those ones, it took me by surprise. It's not one that I mean, in the way I read comics, I'll always put them in order of, like, not necessarily what I want to read the most. What I'll do is I'll put them in order of if it's the combined universe stuff, then it has to go in the reading order, like the exact reading order that IDW put those issues out. That's how I read them. And it usually falls that Rom and the Micronauts issues are usually, like, on top of that pile. And I usually save, like, the G.I. Joe based ones till last, because that's just something I've always done. So but in this case, like, I was really taken by surprise, because I didn't really think I'd be that, like, impressed with it, but I have been. And I have to, for that reason, I'll have to give it 4 potatoes out of 5. Okay, let's move on to something very special indeed. And that is the anniversary edition IDW Comics Group G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero, reissue 1. In celebration of the release of G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero number 250, take a special trip back to where it all started in G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero issue 1, a America's elite counter-terrorist strike force, codenamed G.I. Joe, is the most fearsome rapid deployment team of all and stands ready to fight anywhere, anytime, anyway. Now, the reason we've obviously popped this one in, we know that everyone who is a G.I. Joe fan has read this comic. If they're a G.I. Joe fan, I don't think anyone on the earth isn't a G.I. Joe fan hasn't read this issue one of the Marvel run. The comic that started it all, I would say, in terms of Larry Hama's incredible input into this wonderful franchise. What we would do is do like a little special review, just as if it's new, right, Brian? And we're reading it for the first time. So first off, let me hear your thoughts, Brian, on what you think of this particular issue, this brand new issue out.
It actually has been a while since I read this.
Yeah, same.
So coming back to it again, I mean, it was just such a nostalgia trip for me. And I absolutely love Herb Trimpey's art. I absolutely love it. In fact, yeah. I prefer his art for lots of reasons to any of the modern era artists today.
Wow, that's a big claim.
And maybe it's a total nostalgia buzz. I don't know. But looking at this, I felt like I was 12, 13 years of age again. It was just incredible to read over it. You know, it is action-packed. You pick it up. I popped into the comic store today and I got it. And it feels heavier. You know, there's a lot more content in here than your typical issues. So immediately you're struck by that. You know, this is packed full of, G.I. Joe, full-on action goodness. And it doesn't disappoint. You turn that first, pull back the cover, you see that first panel, that's a full page image. The Joes are kind of erecting the US flag. You've got the Sky Strikers flying overhead. You've got explosions in the background. It's clearly the remnant of some major battle that's just happened. And then it cuts to, on the next page, an introduction to the story. And you see the train passing through the jungle. You see some of your main characters on board the train. And then immediately the action kicks in with this outrageous aerial assault by Cobra coming in over the train. The Baroness is in disguise with other Cobra agents as journalists. They immediately launch their plan to kidnap this American scientist who's helped to develop kind of nuclear powered weapons.
Dr. Adele Burkhart.
And it just the action just ramps up from there with the Baroness throwing her, her hostage out a window, and being taken away then in a Cobra helicopter off to this secret Cobra base. It's just, what an intro! And this all happens in the space of three pages. It's just totally action packed. And that kind of...
I always thought it was interesting that they use that giant balloon to get, she releases a gas canister that then obviously fills the balloon so that they both fly away from the train, obviously up into the sky. But then a helicopter picks them up. So if you just imagine the physics of the helicopter blades, the balloon, anyway, it's amazing. But at the same time, at that point, I'm always like, surely that would have so many different outcomes. But it's wonderful. And you're right about the art. There's a real sense of space to Herb Trimpey's art. There's always that kind of, you don't feel confined. In a lot of comics you'll read, everything's very close quarters. Everything's like about filling the panel with as much action as possible. And I find that he does use space a lot better. It's not necessarily like dead space. It's always like there's something interesting there. If you were to see like a modern artist do it now, it would be definitely crammed in. There'd be way more panels going on. So yeah, I totally agree with that. I think he's a brilliant artist.
His line work is it's just superb. There's a panel here, it's on the fourth page, where it's inside one of the control rooms in the Pentagon.
Oh, yeah.
And his perspective lines just go, he creates this sense of a huge room.
Huge, huge place, yeah.
And it's beautiful. But what I love as well is, Herb Trimpey would have had to work to very strict technical guidelines in terms of how the color would be reproduced when it was printed.
Yeah.
So they didn't have Photoshop, they didn't have access to full color printing the way we have today. So those constraints forced him to create an aesthetic that I think is just beautiful. So it's all flat, solid colors. There's no gradients. and shading is just the
basically
illusion
black.
Of shading with cross hatching.
Yeah.
And I just love that aesthetic. I think it's absolutely beautiful.
So as you go through the issue, obviously they've got to pick the team, haven't they? Like the G.I. Joe. Let's see those G.I. Joe dossiers that General Flagg had you compile this morning. And she gets all basically all the characters come up on the screen. You've got Hawk, Zap, Grand Slam, Scarlet, Short Fuse, Steeler, Flash, Clutch, Grunt, Stalker, Breaker, Snake Eyes, Rock and Roll. Oh, and there's Shooter as well, being covered by the hand, which was a lovely little nod to Jim Shooter, wasn't it, at Marvel. So they threw that in there as like a little thing to him. And then obviously in the as we shoot through to the future, we've had Shooter fleshed out as a female character, which caused a little bit of a stir, but I think as a character she's pretty cool. And I know she's obviously in the comic story that they based her on, she dies, you know, sacrifices herself, and is therefore like one of the Joes that, you know, everyone all of the original 13, you know, remember and know, but no one else really is aware of other than this kind of myth and legend kind of thing. So I really like how they did that, and the fact they got a figure of her out in the 50th was awesome too.
Yeah.
But then moving through, this is another one of my favorites, and I love picking out things that I find quite funny in some of the art. And in this bit where the general's there and it's at ease and everyone's in like this exposed gym and you've got what looks like one of them in like this underwater, like, I don't know, it's like a frigging snow globe. Yeah, it's like a back to tank snow globe. You've got Short Fuse like cleaning all of his mortar cannon, which is brilliant. You've got, I think, Stalker and possibly Steeler having like a wrestle on the sumo wrestling mat area. There's a gymnasium not being used. Scarlet's firing, and I love how they've separated all of the zones. So where Scarlet's firing her crossbow at like a, you know, a human cardboard cutout, next to her is Flash like zapping the, a like just random
concrete
block
wall.
Of foam is what it looks like. Yeah, it's definitely concrete. And I think Rock and Roll firing off some machine gun, kind of, you know, doing some machine gun training. But they're only separated by partitions that are actually shorter than them. So the safety features there are kind of out the window.
Safety was on vacation that day.
I just loved that so much. And we also get to see Cobra Island for the first time. So they introduce quite a lot of things, like they drop you in it, don't they? And that it's like, well, here, these are all the characters for G.I. Joe, these are all the characters for Cobra, you're in it. There's no origin story, it's just simply you're in the middle of the fight.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great setup issue. Like this, it's such a diverse universe, even, you know, with just the original 13 characters. There's so much to introduce to people up front. And, you know, between Larry Hama and Herb Trimpey, they've done it brilliantly to really set the scene. And obviously they had the advantage of, you know, it's a bumper issue, there's extra pages. But this provides a great launch pad for where they can take the story after that, and they can focus in on kind of fewer characters now, you know, in subsequent issues. But the pacing that they kicked off with at the start, it doesn't stop. They just keep going with that pace and that energy all the way through the whole issue.
What I found really interesting, in actual fact, is the lack of known vehicles at this point. And if you go into like the castle where Cobra Commander and let's kind of, as we go through this, so they've picked the team. The team are now being briefed on their mission to rescue Dr. Adele Burkhart from Cobra Island. And on Cobra Island, we kind of, so like you go through all that kind of, you know, the rigmarole of them briefing and going through what they're going to do, who's going to be doing it, what the teams are. And then in the meantime, you're back in, you know, the Cobra headquarters. You've got troopers, you've got kind of telecommunications troopers, but they're all very much the same. They're all just wearing the same equipment, same gear. So you don't have, obviously, at this stage, you don't have the kind of huge back catalogue of Vipers and Techno Vipers and Tele Vipers and stuff like that yet. So we're in a position where we're just, you know, we're seeing the basics. We're seeing vehicles that are heavily military styled rather than G.I. Joe vehicles and Cobra vehicles necessarily. So there's a scene inside the castle grounds and you've got tanks, but they're all different kinds of tanks, and you've got half track trucks, and you've got like a Jeep with a gun on the back of it, but none of them are like Cobra vehicles, as you know, none of them. It's not the Stinger, it's not like Maggot or something. You've got you've got some very basic standard issue stuff here at the moment. And not just that, but we get the, as they invade Cobra Island, Force 2, who are on, you know, on this mental hydrofoil LCT landing craft tank, which I'm surprised never really was, you know, kind of developed as a vehicle or anything like that. It's effectively amphibious vehicle on skis with tank, with a tank on it. It's amazing. And and also you see like the Cobra sigils on things like Russian fighters, like MiG fighters and like a Hercules and stuff like that. So I found it really interesting that we didn't have that many vehicles at this point, you know, obviously like literally right at the start of its inception. We do obviously have the Vamp, which we see early on in for the G.I. Joes, but, you know, that's kind of all they really were working with at this point, wasn't it?
I think all we've got on the Joe side is the Vamp with the HAL.
Oh, the HAL, HAL laser, yeah. And maybe and the Mobat maybe as well, right?
The Mobat, and do we have the motorcycle? What were we going to call Warhol's motorcycle? Yeah, that's the action force.
It's the RAM, by the way, Rapid Attack.
The RAM, yeah, yes, RAM. The RAM cycle, yes. Those tanks, actually, that you meant, that panel where you see Cobra Commander up in the balcony and he's overlooking the courtyard, you've got all the Cobra troops on parade, and you do mention, you know, the tanks, they look like a different variety. But first off, there's not a HISS tank in sight.
Yeah.
But they've obviously used some sort of military reference, you know, for the various tanks that are in the background. Some of those tanks kind of look like a maggot.
Yeah, there's definitely some, probably wouldn't have said maggot had I not had that subconsciously like go through my mind as I was looking at it. So yeah, you're very right there. Yeah, totally. It's almost like the different pieces of the maggot all separated and lined up. It's quite interesting when you're looking back at this, rather than you've had such history in the G.I. Joe and the Cobra kind of world, and then you look back at like the old stuff and you think, oh yeah, that wasn't available then, and that wasn't available then. And they've even got the Cobra helicopter, which has made a lot of kind of appearances throughout the comics and was never even done as a vehicle. So that, you know, that's also quite interesting. But yeah, so obviously the Joes, they infiltrate Cobra Island, all hell kicks off or breaks loose, and they end up thinking they've rescued Adele Burkhart. Stalker swoops in with his jetpack, and that turns out to be the Baroness. So Adele Burkhart is still under Cobra control. And then it's left to Snake Eyes and Scarlet to try and rescue her from Cobra Commander and the Baroness. And they do so. Everyone bursts in. The bad guys get away to fight another day. And the G.I. Joes have all their stuff blown up at the castle on Cobra Island. But everyone gets away. No fatalities. And Dr. Adele Burkhart actually turns out to be very appreciative of them rescuing her. And what I found really interesting, have you read the story when Larry came back to Adele Burkhart recently in the A Real American Hero run?
I haven't seen that.
Well, I'm not going to say anything because there's a massive spoiler in it. So I'll let you, because I know you're interested in maybe looking back at some of those Real American Hero issues that came out.
Yes.
Yeah. So I won't say anything. But everyone that's listening that knows what I'm getting at knows that they revisited the Dr. Adele Burkhart storyline, and it was really cool. It was really nice little storyline. Introduced some more characters as well, some more fringe characters that don't usually get much in the way of kind of any spotlight, including, I think, Long Range was in there too. And if you've ever seen Long Range, he's the one that drives the Thunderclap. So obviously with Long Range, he drives the Thunderclap, but he's kind of used as a sniper in this issue, in that kind of later issue, because he's got the helmet with the kind of eyepiece on it. He's like super crazy futuristic looking and sticks out like a sore thumb. And I love the fact that Larry used him in that run as well. Like, you know, completely unchanged, like the same uniform and everything. Like there's no update at all. It's just that's it. So that was brilliant. In terms of, it was groundbreaking. Kids loved it. It was hugely popular. It was one, I mean, everyone I tend to talk to when I speak to them, they're usually more so, it's usually more so like the, you know, they're more comic than they are cartoon. That seems to be like the kind of standard issue response when it comes to a lot of the fans that I've met along the way in the G.I. Joe community. It's always like, yeah, you know, I like the cartoon, but the comic for me was like really, that was what I really enjoyed, because it was a little bit more gritty, a little bit more real, a little bit more, you know, interesting, and the stories weren't too far-fetched and stuff like that. But, you know, it was definitely one of those things that, I mean, we had it differently. We had the Action Force comics, didn't we?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, the characters, the universe was completely different. Like the names were the same, but their personalities and backgrounds were completely different. And even like the writing styles and the art style was, you know, totally different, say, for Battle Action Force compared to what Larry and Herb were working on.
Yeah, and yet we still got little strips from A Real American Hero stuffed in the back just to really confuse us, didn't we? To really throw us off. I liked how they were carefully selected, but they still kind of gave, they just gave me constant questions all the time about what is this, what's going on? But I found that quite fun. And in any case, Brian, what would you, I mean, in terms of the first issue and looking back on it now and having you know, not having read it for quite some time, is it still something that you think is, you know, does it still stand up for you?
Oh, but I mean, amazingly, I think this still stands up. You know, this still holds up as a great piece of comic book creation. You know, the story is, you know, I mean, the plot is not the deepest of kind of plot lines. That there's a couple of nice twists in there for sure. There's a few things like the, you know, that kind of balloon that they use to, you know, get their way up to the helicopter. I mean, that sounds a bit, you know, even visually looking at the panels here, you go, how the hell that's not going to work? But but you kind of have to suspend disbelief a little bit when you're kind of diving into the world of G.I. Joe.
Yeah,
so you can forgive things like that, but it's a pretty, you know, solid piece of kind of action adventure, and that the graphics, the visuals in this are just stunning, just beautiful. I mean, Herb Trimpe's color palette, I mean, it is unique. You know, even comparing it to some of the Battle Action Force color spreads that we used to get, he's a standout artist from that era. And to have something of his in my collection, I don't have many comics that Herb Trimpe illustrated. I'm really, really happy to have this. And for sure, you know, I think he's up there with, you know, he surpasses the best of what we've got today.
Awesome. And also, it probably would be remiss of us not to talk about the, because it's the anniversary edition, they did a special cover for it. They did a slightly heavier stock. Beautiful. I love that kind of feel of this cover. Like, that's got that kind of like texture, that kind of soft matte texture, hasn't it?
Yes.
I do like that. But then obviously you've got that embossed logo, which has got that kind of really nice shine mirror kind of thing going on. Beautiful. You've got a tiny little square with Duke up in there, and that's by Neil Adams, by the way. So that's been tucked in there beautifully in the top hand, in the top left-hand corner, and that's a Neil Adams drawing of Duke, and looks brilliant. The actual cover is really nice as well, and that is by Guy Dorian Sr., IDW, and my goodness, I just really like what he's done with this. It's kind of like a nice homage to that first issue, the original, that had them all, you know, jumping off the front of the tank with Steel like holding his visor and firing what looks like a bazooka. And then obviously in the new one, he's done like a really good job of kind of like redoing it a little bit. Like, so on the front of this one, instead of Stalker, he's gone with Roadblock. You've got Snake Eyes and Scarlet on the front of this one, and it looks like Hawk is on both covers with the two pistols on the front. I mean, that could be Hawk, it could be Grunt. I'm not quite sure who that one is, but again, really cool. And then he's also gone with, on the newer cover, Steeler again in the tank. And then who I actually thought he was going for Grand Slam here, because Grand Slam obviously did come with the darker gear and the silver pads. But obviously on the original, that was, I think, Flash that was firing on the tank. Am I right? Maybe it was Grand Slam on the original.
Is that Duke with the two pistols instead of Hawk?
Well, I thought, oh yeah, I suppose it is, isn't it? But he's got like a helmet. It doesn't really make any sense.
Your classic Duke would have a helmet.
Yes, you're right. He probably is Duke then. I suppose, yeah. Because, I mean, it's Duke in the top left-hand corner, so it's probably Duke on the front of the tank. I'm going to, yeah, okay. Well, let's say definitively that we think Steeler on the new one, we think it's Steeler in the tank. I think I just had Hawk in my head because I had Grunt in my head because he was the most, you look very generic, but you are right. I think there's a definite vibe of Duke there as well. And then, but for me, I just thought that was Grand Slam, because Grand Slam was the one that had the darker gear. And even though on the original you've got what looks to be Flash, I would probably suggest that is Grand Slam on the jump, like on the left-hand side in the dark costume. So let's just go ahead and say that. If we're wrong,
okay.
Just, you know, guys, if we're wrong, just, you know, let us know in the comments, yell at us, and we will, on the next episode, probably not talk about it still.
Beg for your humble forgiveness.
But I think definitely on the original, we're talking Hawk. Grunt is in the top left-hand corner in the little space, in the little kind of square on the original. Steeler driving the tank, Scarlet and Stalker at the front with Zap on one side, and who I just assumed was Flash on the other side. So we will, I suppose we'll find out soon when this goes live. Anyway, let's get a potating for your Real American Hero issue 1, Brian. Sorry. I'm getting my Irishman mixed up.
Just entirely for the Herb. Actually, before I give it a potating, I've been bigging up Herb Trimpey's artwork for the whole, you know, every time I've mentioned him. But I do need to give a shout out to the inker, Bob McLeod, who did obviously a brilliant job on the inking. And
good old Bob.
Glennis Wine, the colorist.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously they're part of the overall visual creative team that helped to make this absolutely beautiful comic. So,
and Jim Novak, letterer.
Jim Novak, of course, yes.
We might as well give a shout to the entire team that were involved in this, right?
Larry Hammer.
Tom DeFalco, editor. Editor-in-chief, Jim Shooter. And, of course, Larry Hammer, the writer. But I think everybody bloody knows that, don't they?
For sure.
It's incredible. But, yeah, how many potatoes would you give it?
For the beautiful artwork alone and for the amazing trip down memory lane looking at this, I've got to go with a full 5 stars.
And I'm going with a sack of potatoes because I just like hyperbole. And yeah.
Did I say stars? I meant potatoes.
You can say stars. I can knock up a quick 5-star rating Photoshop. I'll just steal it off Justin's site. It won't be difficult to find one. I'll just click on any random figure and it should have a 5-star rating. I kid. Okay, let's move on to some... this is the end of the comics talk. Obviously, there's still going to be comics talk, but we're moving out of actual comics that have been released and we're moving into something slightly different. Explosion. Brian and I are going to discuss what's been going on very, very recently. So Tom Waltz, editor and senior staff writer at IDW Publishing, has been revealing some awesome cover and interior panel art for a number of upcoming G.I. Joe titles on Twitter today. These include A Real American Hero number 257, drawn by Jamie Sullivan, a superb cover featuring Ace and his Sky Striker above three unknowing Night Ravens. It's amazing. We'll talk about that in more detail in a sec. The art is sensational and gives me hope for a cool Ace-centric aerial story following the special missions issues that end at 255. He also posted a retailer incentive cover for 256, showcasing Dawn Moreno, Low Light, Cover Girl, Scarlet, and Rock and Roll, and some interior panels for 251, the Stalker special missions issue right around the corner. We also just got some sneak peeks at the layouts for 252 as well. Phew. I mean, he's been busy today, Tom Waltz. Let's talk about that Ace cover first. I mean, describe that one to us, Brian.
For anyone who hasn't seen it yet, we have this incredible image where in the foreground, you see Ace in the cockpit of a Sky Striker. And he's kind of giving us a hand signal. But behind him, he's obviously way, way, you know, very high up over a city. So in the very far background, you get to see almost like this satellite view of kind of some sort of a city. And then in between him and the ground in the distance, you have these three Night Ravens. And the sense of scale, the sense of perspective is just phenomenal in how this is crafted. The use of color, you have obviously, you know, the sun must be kind of coming up in the distance, and you have this sun flare coming off the canopy of the Sky Striker, which is, I mean, it's absolutely beautiful, and it's kind of golden haze across the whole image. But it's got that sense of movement. Everything's in this kind of diagonal from top right down to bottom left swoop. It's very dynamic. There's a lot of action here. These are the kind of images that really drew me into comics and gave me a love and a passion for comic art. This is comic book cover art at its best.
Absolutely superb, isn't it? I mean, the like you mentioned about the lighting on this, like the where you've got the sun, you know, gleaming off the cockpit, it's just glorious. I mean, you've got this, I mean, you can, this is the kind of image you look at and you can hear what's going on. You can feel what it's like to be in that cockpit. You know, like everything about, you get that sense of scale. You get that kind of like, that kind of distance. It's, I mean, it's so high up, you kind of don't feel the vertigo or anything, but you've got that, just that sense of scale and distance and size, and it's just brilliant. To get all of that on what is effectively an A4 page is pretty impressive. And yeah, just beautiful. And I love how you can just about make out the G.I. Joe logo on the corner of the page that's written on the Sky Striker. So they've kind of squeezed the branding in as well, which is beautiful. You've got obviously Captain Brad Ace Armbruster written on the, you know, as it was on the actual toy. And just as the US Air Force and other Air Force out there have their names emblazoned on their planes and stuff, it's just really cool. The Night Ravens, they just, you know, they get going, whatever their business they've got there, they're going about it unbeknownst to them, they're being watched by Ace. And what would appear to be another aircraft. I was hoping if we zoomed in close enough to Ace's visor, we would see something, like we would see a clue as to what he is looking at. I mean, effectively, he's looking at the reader, you know, the person looking at that comic. He's signaling to the reader. He's like, you know, look down there. Like he's pointing at his eyes to say, you know, we've got bogeys.
got eyes on these bogeys.
So technically, he should be pointing at his nose. But yeah, agreed. Like, you know, just absolutely brilliant. And, you know, you get the feeling there's another Sky Striker there with someone else in it, or there's the X-30 there with Slipstream in it, or there's Ghost Riders in the stealth fighter. So like, I'm just, I can't wait for this issue. If it's an Ace-centric one, we've had some pretty cool aerial-only battle comics in the past, haven't we, Brian? And in fact, I think we had a really good one for Action Force as well, in like the Action Force either weekly or monthly. I can't remember which one it was in, but it was really good.
I know in Battle Action Force, aerial combat featured in every issue of that comic. Now, it may not have always been an Action Force story. It might have been one of the World War II centric stories, but it was, you know, in that kind of 80s era, you know, aerial battle, every week there was something in there. Even if it was just Johnny Red, but which I loved that particular story as well. But I would love to see a full issue of just all-out aerial combat. That would be a real challenge to write that and to craft that, but I think it could be amazing if they pull that off.
I'll tell you what it was. It was Action Force Weekly, and it actually spread over 29, 30, and 31 issues, and it was, the story was called Sky Strike, and it was effectively, you know, Ace in the Sky Striker versus, it was like a Cobra Fang, and then the dragonflies turn up and they deal with the fangs, and then there's this big aerial battle, and it was funny because, and then, you know, they almost crash but they make it, and it's basically a battle between Sky Strikers and helicopters, which is always mental. It's always like, you know, that just would never be a thing. Like, you know, you'd be just destroyed as a helicopter in a battle like that. It'd be too far, like your jets would be too fast and your helicopters wouldn't be able to do anything. But it was that I just loved that. And then obviously in the Marvel run, there was the Ace versus Wild Weasel whole story arc, wasn't there? Where they were just, you know, fighting in air, and they end up like just completely destroying both their planes. Neither of them end up crashing. They both run out of weapons by the end of it, and they both give each other a salute at the end as if to say, like, well, I don't like you, but I respect you. You know, like it was like that.
I love that.
It was really cool.
If we were just to kind of fantasize a little bit here, if they brought a RoboSkull into this story for 257, that would just be the icing on the cake.
And it's not like they haven't done that in the past. Larry's had the RoboSkull in like four issues now, I think. So yeah, we definitely could see that popping up again. It's always one of those things that as soon as it comes in, like I think I'm messaging people immediately, like, oh my god, did you see the RoboSkull, like straight away. Like we just have that response to it as like UK fans, you know. Okay, yeah. So that was the Ace cover. We've also, or Tom Waltz has also been releasing some other stuff as well. So there's the Dawn Moreno cover. I say Dawn Moreno because she's the kind of main like person on it. So on the issue 256, you've got Dawn Moreno kind of in the middle of it's a retailer incentive cover, and her swords, the way she's holding them, are kind of separating the page into kind of quadrants, but like in a really kind of cool way. So they're angling down as she's crossed her chest, like she's got her arms across her chest, and the swords are being held like reverse style, and the blades are angling downwards either side of her. So you've got Scarlet and Rock and Roll underneath her, and you've got Cover Girl and Low Light above her, and it's kind of all like in this really nice black and white at the moment. I'm not sure if it will be a black and white cover. I mean, I would happily, that would be awesome to have as a retail incentive. I imagine it will be coloured at some stage, but it just looks amazing. And obviously, if we're getting to see Low Light, we're getting to see Rock and Roll and Cover Girl, then great. Scarlet as well, but again, we see Scarlet in like every issue, so it would be just nice to see some, you know, some other characters getting some love here. What do you think of that one, Brian?
I think this is beautiful. I mean, I love the design of the Dawn Moreno character anyway, but how the character's been crafted in this particular image is really stunning. There's a lot of detail, like the armored shoulder pads, and then how her kind of gauntlets are crafted as well. It almost has kind of a steampunk kind of vibe to it.
Big time.
It reminds me, the black and white aesthetic actually reminds me of some of the artwork from 2000 AD back in the 80s. Yeah, and I'm thinking of people totally, like Simon Bisley, or even like Brian Boland's work on kind of Nemesis the Warlock. I actually love if they were to do a full black and white issue, or even just a black and white cover, because I really, really like that aesthetic. But yeah, this looks fantastic.
The art is by Luca Pizzari, who is Luca Piz on Twitter. That's LukaPiz, or PIZ if you're American. And it's just awesome. So I can't wait to see that. I'm getting kind of a buzz just thinking about all these covers that are coming out before we even know what the stories are about, you know, before we even hear about the solicitations on them. We have also got an interior from the Stalker issue, the first Special Missions kind of centric issue, 251. And it's basically, you know, you've only got two very small panels of him being kind of pinned down by gunfire around a corner, and him like just pointing the gun around the corner and firing back like and blind. I quite like that. I think that's quite cute. But yeah, I mean, nothing much really to go on there. But again, we've been given quite a few little kind of looks at what the Stalker issue might contain, and it's looking pretty good. I must admit, I'm interested in seeing how that pans out.
I like that he's in civvies, and it suggests, you know, that maybe suggested like a backstory or a flashback or something happening here, or it could just be that he's off duty and just gets pulled into action, you know, unprepared. But of course he's Stalker, so he's always ready, even just to stick his pistol around the corner.
Even just to fire around corners, yeah. And the last images that we got from Tom today were of some really cool early layouts, layout designs from Larry for the Baroness issue, which is 252. And this looks really cool because you get like an insight as to the first machinations of what that comic layout's going to look like.
Yeah, I'd actually love when you get to see these process insights in, you know, behind the scenes, like how it all starts. The Baroness, you know, as we look at these panels, she's reaching down, she's going to grab something, and then in the next panel she's lifting up what looks to be some like a really oversized kind of rifle or rocket launcher, and then we see her kind of crashing through the air in some kind of vehicle, it looks like, and then honing in on a target like in a bell tower or something like that. It looking forward to seeing how this unfolds, how this develops. But again, all out action. I love it.
I think that it does look like a vehicle is jumping towards a building. It's actually, I think, the perspective of something on the ground looking up. So if you can see, she's behind like a wooden structure, and then you just see the other side of it from the position of the guy on top of the building looking down, if you know what I mean. So yeah, it's kind of, That's the first thing I thought when I looked at it. It looked like a Flintstones kind of car was flying through the air, about to crash into a building. I think that's definitely a ground. It's a weird perspective, but I think once it's drawn out, it'll look really cool.
I wonder if it's like a mining cart or something. It's a really weird looking vehicle.
Or maybe they're not wheels. Maybe they're just things that he circled to say that this is like that's a rock and that's a, you know, I don't know. But yeah, I know what you're saying. And also the other panel is quite, you know, all you can really make out there is they're in a car that just nearly gets blown up. They manage to keep it on the road, and then Roblox starting to shoot at stuff. That's all you can really gauge from that panel, that page. But again, really cool, awesome stuff on the horizon. What are you looking forward to most, Brian, from the kind of issues that we've got kind of coming up? We've got that run of special missions issues, which is Stalker, Baroness Scarlet, Duke, and I'm missing one, aren't I?
Is it Destro? Did you say Destro?
Oh, Destro, thank you. Although that hasn't been confirmed 100% yet. It still could be the snake armor.
I hope it's snake armor.
Yeah.
It just goes rogue. You know, the electronics just go bonkers, and it's
hilarious.
Rampaging around a Cobra base, and Destro has to take it down.
Big time. That, for me, that's a story I'd read in a second and enjoy. not just those issues, but then obviously you've got the follow-up issues afterwards, and by the look of that Ace cover, that just makes me want that comic now. I mean, what about you? What are you looking forward to the most?
Looking at this, there's no shortage of great ideas for how the current creative team are going to play in the Real American Hero universe. I mean, I'm looking forward to the special missions. It is going to be a long break before we resume some of the storylines that kind of were started in issue 244, 243. So I'm looking forward to those when they come back up again, but it could be 5 or 6 months down the line. I really like the Don Moreno character, and I would love to see Neto Diaz return to the G.I. Joe universe. And in fact, he actually confirmed on Instagram the other day that he will be returning to the G.I. Joe comics, so that's good news. I'm looking forward to that
big time.
The A story, I mean, look, we've kind of fantasized about what could happen there, and if even half of that, you know, came into fruition in issue 257, I know that's going to be like a really, really good fun. But, you know, the very next thing that I'm particularly looking forward to is going to be the Stalker episode. Stalker's one of my favorite characters.
Awesome.
From when I was a kid, and I can actually remember there was I think it was in the Marvel run, there was a Stalker-based story. And I can't remember the exact details of the story, but there were a lot of panels of him and his team in the jungle.
Yeah.
And he's just one of those G.I. Joe characters that I've always really, really liked. And he's kind of, you know, he's just a real, you know, bad.
Was it the one where Scoop becomes like a G.I. Joe? You know, I remember the cover. I remember that one of Stalker leading Scoop and a bunch of the other guys in a mission, and they're kind of ambushed, and Scoop ends up having to he's not really a fighter. He's really there just to kind of like get footage, battlefield footage, and he ends up having to whack one of the Cobras over the head with his camera and breaks it. Wasn't that issue? Was it?
I think that was it. That rings a bell.
Yeah, I'm
gonna have to go digging.
We got that as a holiday special in the UK, didn't we? That's why. I think that's why. Or we got it in an annual. It was either in an annual or a holiday special, because I remember having that issue as well in the UK, not in the US. And I remember absolutely bloody loving it. It's just a beauty.
I remember copying loads of the panels out of that, because I would copy, you know, I used to love drawing as a kid, and I'd had a sketchbook. I had the comic in front of me, and I would copy out the panels that I really liked.
Nice.
And I remember doing loads of panels from that particular story. So the Stalker story, if I had to pick one thing that I'm really looking forward to, it's going to be the Stalker special mission.
Brilliant. And you don't even have to wait that long. That'll be
even better.
I have to wait for about 6 months before that Ace cover comes out. But I can't wait. Anywho, that brings us to the end. Brian, thank you anyway for joining me, mate. That was really fun.
My pleasure. Loved it.
So that's it for this installment of the Full Force Comics Burst. Thank you to my awesome co-host, Brian. See you next time. And as always, Full Force. Make sure you get involved with the discussion by liking, sharing, and commenting on these videos. And as always, you can keep up with the show after listening by following on Twitter at The Full Force, liking the Facebook page, facebook.com/TheFullForce. And if you'd like to contact the show, you can message us on either of those platforms with feedback, questions, or just to troll. Look out for more of these comic bursts on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, our Facebook page, Twitter feed, and YouTube channel from now on. Full Force. And a big shout out to our sponsors, Distant Planet Comics and Collectibles, located at 601 Business Loop 70 West Suite 263, located in the Parkade Center, Columbia, Missouri. You can visit their website at distantplanetcomics.com and on Facebook at facebook.com/distantplanetcomics.